just want to introduce to you our speaker today. One of the things that is unique and very beautiful about Bloom is that about half of our women go to fellowship and the other half go different places. And so we love that, bringing the big church, capital C, together. And so we are going to introduce to you today Ben Parkinson. Where is Ben? There he is, Ben Parkinson. And Ben is one of our teaching pastors here at Fellowship. And just a little bit about Ben, he's married to Amy, and they have three girls. So they're in the throes of this parenting and marriage and spiritual development and growth, just like we are. And so he also has a unique heart for discipleship and has been very familiar with Downline. So not only is he going to help us kind of conclude the Downline series, but also just the conclusion for our year, as he's going to share some ways that he and Amy have discipled their girls and other people in the community. So we're so thankful to have you, Ben, and look forward to hearing from you.
Thanks, Kathy. I appreciate it. Yeah, it really is a joy to be here with you guys. Really, Downline, not formally Downline, but Ken and Vaughn, who started Downline, is in Memphis. And he was a part of the church that we planned there when he was launching that. And really, that was even birthed out of a program that he did in Denton at Denton Bible Church with a pastor named Tom Nelson that I also did out of college. And so that whole idea of intentional discipleship has been something that God's used in my life to really move me. I was going to go to dental school originally before I went through that. And not that if you're, you know, go through the discipleship program, you should automatically become a pastor or something like that. It has nothing to do with that. But it was just interesting to see God use the intentionality of peering into his word, spending time in the scriptures, even as we had our jobs and were working, supporting ourselves that year and all those kind of things, just to really force all of us, and not everyone that went through that worked for a church or any of that, but just to ask the question, what does God want to do with my life? You know, whatever it is. And so that really, that kind of ministry has had a huge impact in my life. And I'm glad you guys are getting to hear from some of the guys that are passionate about Downline and really just about discipleship. And hopefully that's what you guys have been wrestling with, is just the importance and the significance of discipleship in your life, in the life of your kids, as you parent, and what that can look like for you. And so I thought, because you guys have heard a ton of great messages already, on the key passages that I would talk about if I was going to talk about discipleship this morning. You guys have heard about the Great Commission, right? And I'll reread some of these just to remind us. But the idea in the Great Commission in Matthew 28, you don't need to be insecure about discipling others, right? Said that even the disciples, verse 17, when they saw him, they worshiped him, but some doubted. And we always think that's about them doubting Jesus. When you look at the construction of that sentence in that paragraph, a lot of it's them doubting themselves. And so to see Jesus and to hear his words in the Great Commission, all authority in heaven and on earth has been given to me. Go, therefore, and make disciples of all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father and the Son and the Holy Spirit, and teaching them to observe all that I've commanded you. And behold, I'm with you always to the end of the age. In the midst of our insecurity about being able to disciple anyone, he gives us his power, right? All authority's been given to me. I can give it to anyone I want, and I'm giving it to you. And his presence. I will be with you, right? His power and his presence. I'm going to give you the authority and the power to do what I'm asking you to do, and I'm going to be with you as you do it. What a great picture of discipleship and of parenting, really, to do things with your kids, with your family as you do that. But also in that passage, you guys talked about this idea that go and make disciples has a progressive nature to that verb, right? It's really as you are going, make disciples. As you're going about the life that God's given you to live, make disciples in the midst of that. And I'll flesh that a little bit more. I know you guys have talked about that, but I'll flesh out a little bit more how Amy and I have wrestled with and tried to take that command seriously and let it change the way we think about discipleship. Because a lot of times in our minds, what we wrestle with, especially as young parents or parents of young kids, is, man, where am I going to find a couple hours a week to disciple people now, right? Like, how am I going to add that into my calendar with all the other things that I have going on? And I think Jesus' progressive nature of that, no, it's as you're going about your life and your parenting that you make disciples, can hopefully free us up in some exciting ways to do that. You guys have looked at 2 Timothy 2:2, right? How little investment can go a long way. I love that passage, one of my favorites. You then, my child, be strengthened by the grace that is in Christ Jesus. And what you've heard from me in the presence of many witnesses, entrust to faithful men who will be able to teach others also. You have four generations right there in one verse of discipleship. How beautiful that is. Share in suffering as a good soldier of Christ Jesus. Man, what a great passage that is, and just how a little investment can go a long way. And I know you guys have already done exercise in here. You had people stand up and see the downline of people in the room and what that kind of discipleship looks like. And then you guys have talked about 1 Thessalonians 2, one of my other favorite passages that really talks about discipleship as spiritual parenting. And that's what I'm going to flesh out a little bit more today in some ways. But I'll just read the section again that's so meaningful to me in verses 7 through 12. Paul, talking to the Thessalonians, says, "But we were gentle among you like a nursing mother, taking care of her own children." He says, that's what our discipleship of you is like a nursing mother. "So being affectionately desirous of you, we were ready to share with you not only the gospel of God, but also our own selves, our very lives," he says, "because you'd become very dear to us. For you know how, like a father with his children, we exhorted each one of you and encouraged you and charged you to walk in a manner worthy of God, who calls you into his own kingdom and glory," right? As a nursing mother, as an exhorting father, that's how we spent time with you. That's how we trained you in the scriptures. That's how we taught you to follow Jesus, just like parents would their children. So as Kathy and I were talking about this final talk, right, and I kind of asked her, yeah, so help me, you know, the best of downline. What all of y'all talked about? And she's like, well, we talked about this, and we talked about this, talked about the Great Commission, talked about 1 Thessalonians, talked about 2 Timothy. I was like, well, that's all I would talk about. And so, but what we really discussed that we thought could be meaningful and helpful is to come and just share how Amy and I, in our lives, raising kids, we have a 15, 17, and 19-year-old girl now, girls, all three of them. So just how in the different seasons of that, of our life, that we have tried to do this, and how has it worked, and how has it not worked, and what's been the messiness of it, and what's been the joy of it, and what are some of the things that we've learned in the midst, how we applied it to our life. So that's what I thought I'd do this morning, is just paint a picture of what it can look like in your own life, and what we've experienced over 21 years of marriage, and 19 years and counting of parenting. So for some of you, I'm going to repeat a couple things you've heard over the last 3 weeks. Hopefully that'll just either help fill in some gaps if you were daydreaming for a minute, or maybe help solidify some things. Repetition's always good. Some of it may be new, and some of the things I'll share maybe you haven't heard over the last 3 weeks, but hopefully it'll help sink in and answer some questions you still may have. And so the first thing that you guys have already talked about that I want to share is just how we discipled our kids. I know it's always a question as you're in a church or in something like this, like Bloom, or you're and hearing about something like downline, and you hear about discipleship, 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 and you go to the Great Commission, and you see all these great passages, and you kind of ask yourself, man, how do I do discipleship when I mean, all day, every day, I've got these wonderful children, right? But they take up a lot of time and effort and energy and focus. How does that happen in my life? And so you guys have talked about this, and I'm so thankful, and hopefully you've heard it loud and clear. I know some of you even asked Kathy directly, hey, so does raising my children count as discipleship? And I hope you've heard loud and clear, absolutely, that is discipleship. It's one of the purest pictures and forms of discipleship God's put on the earth. In fact, if you think about it, going back to the garden in Genesis, had sin never entered the world, that's how everyone would have been discipled. That would have been the only necessary vehicle that we had. Adam and Eve would have discipled their kids perfectly, and if sin hadn't entered the world, Cain and Abel would have still been alive because Cain wouldn't have killed them, right? And Seth and all of them, they would have discipled their children perfectly with their wives, and then those kids would have discipled them. I mean, that's how the whole world would have been discipled, and everyone would have learned to follow God and follow Jesus and done all that through their parents spending years with them, showing them, modeling for them, living within their home, teaching them the truths of God. That's how discipleship in the beginning was created to happen. So to ask yourself the question, does it count? Does raising my kids count? Is that real discipleship, or is that something I got to do while I figure out now how to also obey God over here? No, absolutely. Absolutely it counts. It's one of the purest forms of discipleship that we have on the earth. And so as you think about discipling your kids and what that means, and for Amy and I, as we did that, the thing that I just want to remind you or draw your attention to is the fact that when you think about how you parent your children, there's an intentionality to that, hopefully, right? There's intentional things you do to parent them. There's also a lot of responsive things that you do in the moment, right? I mean, some of it's intentional, and you have a plan, you try and do things. Most of the time, your plans get blown up that day, and you end up responding to a lot of things, right? Both of those are discipling your children, right? I can think of the things Amy and I did that were intentional in our lives. There were things that we did. We had family devotions around the table. We did, since they were little bitty. We said, you know what? We want to establish this. We want this to be a normal thing for them. We want them to grow up knowing we spent time together as a family. We spent time together around the table. We shared a meal. We broke bread. We talked about God. And so we would do that at dinner time. We would have dinner together when they were little, every night, of course. But even as they got older, we fought for that time. And there were times where Allie was playing soccer on a club team or whatever, and those practice times get crazy. And Amy was great about saying, great, we'll have dinner at 8:15 tonight then when she gets home, even though everyone's late for everybody. We got a window here from 5 to 6. Everybody shut it down. We're going to eat from 5 to 6 because Anna's got to go to this thing over here, whatever it is. Whatever the time was, we just adjusted our dinner time and figured it out to make sure that we had at least some time we were connecting as a family around the dinner table together. And because we fought for that so much, that gave us a time to talk about scriptural things together. And sometimes we would do, you know, a certain study that maybe the student ministry when there were students was doing, or sometimes we would read through something that our children's ministry was promoting. A lot of times we just read through the Bible. And we just said, we're just going to tell them the story of God from start to finish. So even as little kids, we just started in Genesis and started walking through. And you don't realize when you do that how R-rated the Bible really is. I forget us. Within the first couple of weeks, we had talked to our kids about sex. We talked to our kids about all kinds of stuff that Amy was like, you sure you want to go here? I'm like, it's what it says. I don't know what else to do. They're asking questions, right? I'm going to answer them. And so if you want to teach your kids about everything, just start in Genesis, and you will hit a lot of stuff, okay? You'll hit a lot of stuff. But one of the things we tried to make sure we did in that, and I'd want you to hear this, we did walk through the scripture. We were intentional about that. We also wanted it to be fun and not just heavy and like the worst part of their day, right? And sometimes we let that go so much that there were times where I had to say, hey, we have a little bit of reverence for the Word of God, because they got so used to joking around when we were talking about the Bible and things that every now and then I had to pull them back. But the last thing you want, you know, your whole family devotional time to be about is you at the table yelling at them to shut up and sit down and take it seriously, right? It's not the picture of spending time with God that you want to build into their lives. And so we just said, hey, we're going to try and go through half of Genesis, you know, 13 today, and we'll see what happens. And sure enough, we would start reading, and we'd stop and talk, and we'd let them ask questions, and it's so funny to watch them kind of raise their little hand at times, and especially our middle one, Anna, had this little munchkin voice, and she'd be like, what exactly is the Ark of the Covenant, you know? And so we would get to talk about that a little bit and just kind of go off, and we would just let it go wherever, and sometimes it was a biblical question, sometimes it was just a random question, sometimes we wouldn't talk about what we went to at all that day, and that was great. Because we were spending time together, they were asking questions. We were drawing it back to our relationship with the Lord. We were discipling them, but it wasn't always what we planned to do that day. And I just want you to feel the freedom to say, that's great, okay? That's great. It's going to be messy. There were times where they were not having it that day, and one was crying, and one was trying to get from the table, and one was stealing her food over there, and she was punching her, and we were like, hey, we're going to have a discipleship moment around being sisters, and what does it mean to be a family, and let's just put this aside and talk about this instead. We responded. We interrupted our intentionality to respond to the moment about what God was calling us to do and what it looked like to follow Jesus in that moment. So we had a very loose plan, okay? And I would just encourage you in the midst of that. I know some of you are type A's, and you got a plan, you want to execute it, and if it doesn't happen, you get frustrated. You've learned by now, probably, depending on how old your kids are. That is hard to pull off. But it doesn't mean you shouldn't be intentional, okay? Doesn't mean you should just fly by the seat of your pants all the time and never have a plan either, because I think if you don't aim at anything, you'll hit nothing every time, right? I think it's good to aim for something, but we were loose with it, and we found it to be really helpful. But we also had intentionality in the way we taught them to worship, and we wanted them to learn how to worship God with us as a family, so we did engage in church with them. And I'm going to say, me being a pastor, on the one hand, we didn't have a choice in what I'm about to say, okay, which is fine. But I would encourage you guys to think about just your own engagement in your church body, wherever it is, whatever church you're a part of. Because Amy and I default, I mean, I was going to be there both services anyway, or three, or however many we were having throughout the years. And so we just knew we're just here, right? So we had to figure out what to do with our kids and how to make that work with us just being there all morning or all day or whatever it was going to be. And so what we ended up doing was one service, we'd put them in the children's ministry, right? And up to a certain, you know, when they were old enough to handle it, the second service, we would just bring them to church with us, and they would sit sit there. And part of that, what we loved about that was we wanted them growing up in the church to not always just be segregated. I think it's great to have age-appropriate discipleship of your kids, okay? That's important. They break down abstract things to concrete things in children's ministry that is powerful in a way that we don't do it in the service. And for your kid to just sit in there and be lost as a goose is not necessarily helping them, okay, learn how to follow Jesus. At the same time, by having them in there the whole morning with us, and I know nap schedules and feeding schedules and all that, we weren't able to do that when they were a little bitty all the time, but at whatever age we were able to, having them in there with us, for them to see adults singing at the top of their lungs, for them to see Amy and I worshiping with our hands raised with passion, for them to hear some of the things that the pastor would talk about, and they wouldn't get it all necessarily, but I was amazed the number of times they looked checked out, and at lunch we had incredible conversations about what they heard in there. You think they're checked out. They're not checked out. Even if they're drawing and scribbling and whatever and all that kind of stuff, there's a part of their ear that's hearing. And we would have amazing conversations about that. And I think you don't have to do it every Sunday, but I would encourage you to think about a part of your discipleship of your kids, helping them be connected to the body of Christ as a whole and not just to their age-appropriate segment of it. Because that's what we've seen a lot of ways. Kids that only go to children's ministry and only go to youth group when they get to college, they get checked out a lot of times because they're not used to being connected to the church the way that the church functions as an adult. And so that was something that we did intentionally, that we found a lot of joy in. And then when they got old enough, we asked them, we said, hey, you're here anyway, you're going to serve, you know. So that helped the church out a whole lot. They had a bunch of real immature girls trying to serve back there with them. We got to pawn it off on them. Hey, you guys disciple them for a while and help them know how to lead a third grade class. But it really, I think it helped church not just be about them, which was a healthy thing too. We had D groups in our home throughout every season of our life, and even seeing Ashley Carson over here, who was a part of one of Amy's for a little while, reminds me of that. I'll talk a little bit more about that in a minute, but I think your kids seeing you pour into other people is a part of their discipleship. It teaches them. It trains them. It shows them life isn't just about them. It makes them, they see kind of early on, I'm not the center of my parents' universe, and that's actually okay. It's actually a good thing. There are other people that matter. They have to say no to me sometimes to do something else over here. That's a good thing. And for them to grow up in a home, and I appreciate this about my parents. See, my mom's sitting over there, that we just always had people in our house that they were praying with, meeting with, talking about Jesus with. That was normal for us. We saw that. We recognized that. We didn't always sit in there with them necessarily, but that just became a part of what normal life meant growing up. And that was a powerful picture for me to experience, even though it meant they weren't always focused on me all the time. That wasn't a bad thing, and I'll share a little bit more about that in just a minute. We served together locally. We had intentional moments where we would say, hey, we're going to go get plugged into whatever we're doing down at Tyler Street. When we first got here, we went down to Tyler Street once a week with the girls and served down there. We were in Memphis. We did a number of things where we would serve locally as a family together. And sometimes that can be real intentional. How am I going to serve the community when I got these kids over here? Take them with you. Take them with you. They have fun doing that kind of stuff, believe it or not. And I don't mean it's always fun. And here's the thing I'll say. My parents are great about this, being crusade people instead of church people growing up, okay? And they helped build it into us. You have to let your kids melt down and not have fun and be okay with that if you're going to do what I'm talking about, okay? You have to be willing. If you're going to take them with you as you disciple and disciple people, what you're not going to be able to do is kind of put the idea out there to whoever you're discipling that you've got it all together, that you're the perfect parent, that your kids behave all the time. If that's your vision for how you're going to help impact others by showing how great you are, then don't do what I'm talking about, okay? Because it will fail miserably. Thanks for the ad there. Someone up here on the B3 organ. I'm about to go into Black church for a minute. That's phenomenal. No, but really, you're going to have to be okay with having whoever you're around and whatever you're doing and whoever you're serving and whoever you're discipling see you respond in a moment to a really awful thing. And how you respond in grace or in anger is going to help. That's part of your discipleship of whoever you're hanging out with. It's for them to see you parent in that moment or to see you fail in that moment and come back and say, that's not how you should do that. I really failed right there. That's a great discipleship moment, right? For them to you to point them to Christ and to their relationship with him and why he needs to be perfect for us more than even how great you are. That's a great part of discipleship. But you got to invite people into your world in order to do that. But we would go serve together locally. We would celebrate holidays intentionally. That's another intentional thing that we do with our kids. On MLK Day, when we lived in Memphis, we went to the Civil Rights Museum. And we didn't just see it as a day off of work and a day off of school. We said, well, why are you skipping school? let's go do that. And so we would take them to see Selma on MLK Day. Memorial Day, we took them to a military graveyard. And we walked around and we found headstones. And we said, hey, we're just going to pray and ask God to lead us to one. And we're going to stop at a headstone and we're going to praise God for the sacrifice of this person's life for us as a country. And we just taught them about sacrifice and what that meant. On Veterans Day, because that's different than Memorial Day, right? Memorial Day, you celebrate the people that died for you. Veterans Day, you celebrate the people who are still serving for you. So we put together care packages and ship them overseas to soldiers that were serving over there and put notes in it. We try to disciple them in those holidays, right? You see the people of Israel in the Old Testament, they're celebrating these feasts throughout the year. They have their weekly Sabbath, right? But then they also have these feasts that they're celebrating, these special times. And I think for us to give our kids a sense of a calendar in their life that matters, of a reason why you say no to something so you can say yes to something else, can be really powerful for them and help them understand that there is reasons why we do these things as a country to remember, right? That's why God had all the feasts, all the festivals, all the marking of things with stones and building of altars to remember what he had done. We need to help our kids remember these things. So you can do some stuff intentionally. These are some of the intentional things we did. When it came time for them to be involved in the church in FSM, there were all kinds of student things going on, and we weren't going to be heavy-handed with that. But I want you to hear me say this. We sacrificed for them to be a part of their church ministry here. And there are a million other things they could have done as teenagers or their friends were doing over here or whatever it is and all that kind of stuff. And we don't want to be legalistic about it, but we did just say, hey, you guys need to think about the church you're a part of. Okay? Are you engaging the church you're a part of? Because all these other things are great, but they're not going to keep carrying you and caring for you the way that your church family will in the long run. So we had intentionality around that. At 13, we sent them all on a mission trip, and we just said, hey, you're going to go experience the world and God moving in the world. He doesn't just move here in Memphis or in Little Rock or wherever we were at the time. At 13, we did passport to Pyrrhus. So we had some intentional things we did at certain ages along the way, okay? At the same time, most of our discipleship of them and most of what you'll experience your discipleship with your kids was very responsive in the moment, right? All that intentionality can be great, and I would say, you know, sit down and think through some kind of a plan, but most of it was responsive. Most of it was them just asking questions around the house about stuff, right? And you can handle that as a parent one of two ways. You know, when they ask why the sky is blue, you say, I don't know, because it is. Or you can stop and you can say, okay, I got a chance to teach them about how God created everything. And you might know exactly why the sky is blue. That's fine. But just the fact that God created it, or now you got, you know, Wikipedia and Google, you can look up anything. I mean, it's way different than my parents sent us to get the encyclopedia out and go find S for sky and look it up and, you know, all that kind of stuff. You can do that on the spot wherever you are now. But you can seize those moments. And I'm not saying you can do it every time, right? We had a Y kid. Some of y'all have a Y kid that asks why about everything. Drives you nuts, right? There were points where after Anna asked why for the 15th time, I said, just because, okay? So I'm not saying you never need to say just because and move on with your day, okay? You're going to have to do that. But in general, you can seize those moments as discipleship moments, right? When they see someone, Amy and I wrestled with, we took them to the park by our house in Memphis, and it was a rough park. But we said, hey, we want to be neighbors to our neighbors. We want to play in the neighborhood we live in. And we went to this park, and there were people smoking and people cussing and people grabbing their kids by the neck and yanking them back and all this kind of stuff. And we wrestled with, we're like, man, do we need to take them to a different park? And we stopped and we said, you know what? The reality is they're going to hear it somewhere. They're going to experience it at some point. And we can either let them experience it at an age where they're talking to us about it and we're explaining what that means biblically, or we can put them in a bubble in a way they never experience it until we don't even know about it, and then they make up their own conclusions about it from their friends. And so we said, all right, we're just going to, you know, deal with it. But when they come and ask us, you know, hey, why is that person doing that? Or, hey, why is that person doing that? Those were discipleship moments to stop and talk about it instead of just kind of brushing it under the rug. When they would fight over something, right, it's a responsive moment where you're discipling your child. And, hey, here's how Parkinson's handled this conflict. Here's how people who believe in Jesus handle this conflict. Here's what it means when he said it's better to give than to receive. Here's what it means when Jesus said consider others as more important than yourself, right? Those are times you can disciple them responsively in the moment and not just see it as barely making it through your day, you know what I mean? Which is how it feels sometimes. You're not just making it through your day. You're teaching them things all the time throughout that day. When we had to discipline them, we can talk about the discipline of God and how discipline is different than wrath, and wrath is punishment, and Jesus frees from that. But discipline is loving, and even the Lord disciplines whom he loves. And that's why we, like, you're discipling them all the time in the midst of your home. Watching shows or movies or listening to certain songs, there came a point in their life where we decided, you know what, we're going to let them listen to secular music. We're going to watch some movies that we don't agree with everything in them. We're going to watch shows together that we don't agree with everything in, so we can talk about it. They're going to watch and listen to that stuff anyway. We can either try and shelter them from it for their whole life, or we can watch it. Not, we didn't go off the deep end with it, don't get me wrong. But we did say, let's talk about it. You know, let's at least have a conversation with them about it. And so we would listen to praise music and we'd talk about that, but at the same time, we'd listen to secular music and we'd say, hey, what do you think that person's writing about? You know? And why, because every song out there written by someone who doesn't believe in Jesus Christ or in God is longing for God in some way, shape, or form. They're trying to make something, whether it's a relationship or a girl or a guy or whatever it is. They're angry about something, if it's a, you know, anti-war song or whatever it is, some kind of cultural, whatever they're singing about, whatever they're mad at, whatever they're longing for, whatever they're miserable with, whatever they're thinking is the greatest thing in the world, even just songs about partying and living up at the club and whatever, right? We talk about that, okay? So what, they're looking for life in fun. And in the kind of fun that Satan says is fun. You know, let's talk about that. Is that where real life is? Like, instead of being scared of that stuff, we would just engage it with them and use it as an opportunity to disciple them in what the scripture says about it. And so there's all kinds of responsive moments that you can do, right? When they had a good day or a bad day at school, it's a chance to respond. Talking to them about why we made certain decisions as a family, right? That's a way to disciple your kids. Sometimes we try to shelter our kids too much from the big decisions in our lives because we don't want to freak them out or scare them. And I'm not saying there's no place to protect your kids and shield them from certain things, but it's also an incredible opportunity to talk to them and disciple them about why you're wrestling with it, what you're really thinking about it, what God's showing you in it, why you would do that versus that, because they're going to get questions about whatever decision you're making. They're going to wrestle with it. I remember we told our kids we're moving here, and I thought, they're going to love it. I mean, their cousins are here. Their grandparents are here. This was home for us growing up. They were bawling, screaming in the back of the car. Why do we have to leave Memphis? We hate you. These are all our friends. Like, which is true. Grandma's not going to come to middle school with them, right? I mean, that's very true. As much as they love her, she's not going to help them out when they show up at eighth grade the first day at a new school and don't know anybody. And so we talked through those things beforehand and really made that a part of our discipleship. So when you think about your kids and doing family, I know you guys have already talked about this with Danny and all that. I don't mean to rehash all of it, but just this idea that it's intentional and it's responsive. And I want to bring that up and talk about that this morning because I'm going to talk about the rest of how you disciple in your life and all the other opportunities God brings across your way. I think you need to think in those terms. There's going to be intentionality and there's going to be responsiveness in your discipling of other people. And that's just as much of discipling, the responsiveness, the times you respond to people in the moment to disciple them. It's not overly intentional. You have an opportunity to disciple people in your life all the time as you go about your life, okay? We also recognize, though, that we needed help with our kids, and I'll just end the kind of family thing with this. We couldn't do it alone, right? So extended family, we know we needed other voices in their lives, but when we were in Memphis, we didn't have that. When we were in Denton, we didn't have that. So we knew we needed other people in our in our kids' lives to reinforce what we're saying, right? Because as parents, you do a good job in some ways, and you screw up in a lot of ways, and that brings a lot of baggage with your kids listening to you, right? They can always point to the reason why they shouldn't have to listen to you, because you did this thing over here 3 weeks ago, and that's why I shouldn't have to listen to you, even though, you know, you've done 8 million things right, and that's why they should listen to you. They have all that baggage in their immaturity. They can point to that. To have other people in their life who are saying the same thing you're saying, who they don't have that baggage with, is really critical. Okay, but that means you need to be thinking about that and building that into the way you're discipling them and into your life along the way so they have those other voices. Whether it's friends you hang out with and parents who have agreed, hey, I'm going to help when I see your kid doing something, speak some truth into their life in a healthy way. I know seeing Star here, Mike Boschetti was someone that did that for me as my parents were trying to disciple us. And as wonderful as they were, you know, we had all kinds of reasons why we shouldn't have to listen to them. And yet Mike would come and say the same thing Mom and Dad were saying. I was like, okay, well, if Mike's saying it, maybe it really is true. I mean, it was true because they were saying it, but sometimes as a teenager, as a kid, you need someone else that you don't have that baggage with that feels more objective, right? That can be other Christian families. It can be FSK teachers, FSMD groups, or student ministry, children's ministry, wherever your church calls those things, mentors in their life. But just know you're going to need someone else in your life to do that. And that really starts, I mean, I'd say do it from an early age, but especially once they hit puberty. Because once those, you know, hormones wash over their brain and change everything in them, they think about everything differently, you included, okay? I'll never forget, I mean, you know, our parents thought we were just the greatest thing in the world, and we did about our parents. And then once you hit 14, you start to see the chinks in the armor, you know? You're like, man, they're not perfect. And yeah, they do that. And you know what? I think I could do that better. And then you have your own kids, and you realize, I was so lucky. My parents were amazing. But until that time, there's a window in there where you can just, all you can see is their flaws. Because before that, all you saw was they were your hero. That's why God says we should have faith like a child, right? When we're following Jesus, he says, unless you have faith like a child, unless you see God the way you saw your parents when you were a child, that they could do no wrong. That's why kids struggle so much with the things that happen in their life when they're kids. That's why they internalize it all and say, it must be my fault or whatever, because in their minds, you're perfect. So anything going wrong has to be them, right? You need to disciple them through that. You need to, by the way, I didn't mention this, you need to apologize to your kids from a young age. You need to say when you did something wrong, that was wrong. Dad shouldn't have done that. Mom shouldn't have done that. I shouldn't have said that way. You need to let them know you're not Jesus early on, because they think you are and they want you to be, and they're going to try to make you that, okay, in their minds. That's a discipleship thing along the way. But just know that eventually all they can see is what's wrong with you, and that's hard, right? any parent in here will tell you that. But over time, I do believe the grace of God brings them back, even if they never voice it to you. I believe the grace of God brings them back to realize all the things that you did in their life to love on them in the midst of that. But all that to say, it's responsive, it's intentional, and you need help doing it, okay? And the reason why I want to share that is because here's the thing. Even though family is the most important, even though it is God's original plan for discipleship in the world, because we do live in a fallen, broken world, not every family, by his grace, has been given faith in him. Therefore, not every kid is being raised in the home that's trying to disciple them. Therefore, there are millions, billions of people on the earth that haven't been raised in the home you're trying to raise your kid in and have not been discipled in that way, which is part of the reason why Jesus says, go and make disciples. That's why the Great Commission is there. To say, listen, there's tons of people made in my image on the earth that I'm going to adopt into my family, being God's family, and I need someone to come alongside and help spiritually parent them, to sow those seeds of the gospel in their life. And if we don't do that, because we have our own families and our own kids and our own lives going on, who's going to? Who's going to? It's actually good for our kids to see us doing that, but it's also the plan of God, because in a fallen, broken world, he's going to adopt kids into his family that he needs people to come alongside and show what it means to follow Jesus. Not only that, but not every person is called to be married. Not every person is called to have their own kids. Okay? But that doesn't mean that every person isn't called to be a spiritual parent of others on the earth. We're all engaged in parenting. It's called discipleship, whether you have your own kids or not. Okay? And we need to be willing to open up our families and expand our idea of family in order to include those around us who need family. Jesus says, who are my mother and my brothers, right? Anyone that's willing to come and follow my Father and do the will of God. Those are my mother. They say, hey, your mom and your brothers are here. You need to stop what you're doing talking to these people and come talk to them. They're more important. And Jesus says, who are my mother and my brothers? Not that he doesn't love Mary and his brothers, right? On the cross, he tells John, behold your mother. Mother, behold your son. He cares about Mary deeply. He's making a point that, hey, the family of God is more than just your blood family. And it's just as important that we see the family of God that way and treat them like family and welcome them into our lives as it is anything else. Our families are the physical picture of what God's asking us to do in our relationship with Christ. But he's asking us to do more than that, right? That's why he's the bridegroom. The church is the bride. And when a bride and a bridegroom come together, hopefully over time, right, as they keep sowing the seeds of intimacy with one another, they conceive a child. As we're one with Christ and invest in our relationship with Christ and keep on building our intimacy and our relationship with him, hopefully the overflow of that intimacy and of our excitement about our relationship with him will breathe new life and conceive new spiritual children that we get to welcome into our home and raise just like our physical. It's a picture of what he's calling us to in the gospel and the Great Commission in the midst of that. But we've got to be willing to open our lives up to that. So some of the ways that Amy and I did that along the way, one is through neighboring, okay? Your neighbors are an opportunity for discipleship in your life. Okay, and I know in our culture, man, that can be an iffy proposition, right? I mean, some of us, we come home, we pull in the garage, we close the door, we have dinner, we wake up, we pull out of the garage, we go to work, we don't even see our neighbors, don't talk to them. And in some way, it's a cultural thing with us. It's like we kind of like it that way, you know? And our neighbors like it that way. And if you kind of just, you know, I mean, just try it one time. Maybe some of you are probably great neighbors, and this is an issue for you at all. Some of you may be like me, and just you kind of pull out of the parking lot one day, and you look over your neighbor like, hey, how's it going, buddy? And just see what happens, right? A lot of times they're like, okay. And they get in their car and drive away, you know. So there may be some intentionality around that in terms of inviting them over for dinner, you know, having a little neighborhood dinner gathering, whatever it is, reaching out to them. There are ways you can get to know your neighbors, but I would say that's an opportunity for discipleship. I know for Amy and I, God put some neighbors next to us in Memphis, Janie and Jonathan, who were, Jonathan was a South African Jewish a professor at Memphis who was not only not a Christian, but he taught classes on why Christians were anti-Semitic. So we had an interesting relationship. But what was great is Janie grew up in the church and then renounced it to marry Jonathan and become Jewish. So she had somewhat of a background of all that. But for us to neighbor with them and to spend time with them and to have their daughter over to play with our daughter and to watch Allie try and convert Julia and Julia get mad at her and say, respect my Jewishness, and that's a great story for another time. But and Allie was just so worried she wasn't saved because she was grasping heaven and hell. So Allie, when they would go play with their dolls, all of Allie's dolls, she would start acting out biblical stories and all these kind of things. And Julia was trying to act out the Jewish stories, you know, and kind of the way she thought about it. And, you know, and then Allie would, you know, be able to be reading her Jesus storybook Bible in the corner out loud as Julia's in the room. And it was real confusing. But we sat down with Jonathan and Janie and we said, hey, listen, we just want you to know, we're not going to tell our daughter not to talk to your daughter about Jesus, because we don't believe, at our faith, we believe it's important to share what you believe about Jesus with people. We're not going to discourage that. At the same time, I want you to know, we're not inviting your daughter over to try and convert her to Christianity. And they were great about it. You know, I think just having that honest conversation with them, they were like, we appreciate that, you know. At the same time, just know, anytime Allie comes over, you know, she's welcome to engage in everything we're doing. They invite us over for some Sabbath dinners, right, for some Seders at their house on Friday nights. We got to experience that with our kids and go home and disciple them in that. It was awesome. Jonathan and I would jog, and the way, you know, South African Jews debate is more like screaming. So people that would see us jogging would be like, they're going to kill each other. Like, he's like yelling at me about the Bible, and I'm like just arguing back with him about XYZ. And then at the end, he was great. That's the great thing about those people. They debate hard, but then they're like, all right, give you a hug. I'll see you tomorrow. We're going to keep running. You know, yeah, sure. But in neighboring with one another, you have an opportunity as you're going about your life to disciple, to build into people's lives, to share with them things that are going on, right? Your neighbors, especially if you have other moms, you live around other kids, y'all are on the same schedule. You can go to the park together. You can have them over for coffee when the kids are down or whatever it is. You can do those things. See that as an opportunity to reach out and to disciple others even while you have young kids. Also, I'd say invite kids into your home, like we said with Julia, but as kids got older, we lived in a neighborhood where a few girls, Robin and Rachel, who lived in a house across the street that was not going well, and our house kind of became the safe haven for them to escape to, and we got to spend time with them. They would spend time around our dinner table, around our lunch table. They would just come over and want to hang out. And on the one hand, we had to kind of keep an extra eye out to see what they were encouraging our kids, our girls, to get into, because they weren't in a healthy home or a healthy place. But man, we had tons of opportunities to share with them. And so we should invite them into what we were doing. That's a great way to disciple your kids' friends or other neighbors or whatever. Just invite them to do what you're doing and then have that responsive time. We'd invite them over for dinner knowing we have family devotionals every dinner night. And we had them over for dinner, we didn't stop that. We just picked up, opened up the Word, started talking. They saw our kids asking questions. Over time, they would ask questions and kind of say, hey, what does that mean and why would y'all do that? And so we had a great chance to disciple some of our neighbors that way and some of their kids. Through looking for those in need, we had people that would stop by our house and just, you know, ask for help, whatever, ask to rake the leaves, ask for something along those lines. And you can view those moments as real transactional, right? I mean, you're at home. A lot of times y'all are the ones that get those knock on the doors, right, with someone saying, hey, can I rake your leaves for $2 a bag or whatever, and you're doing the math on that, and like, well, how are you going to fill the bags up? Like, how many bags are we talking about? Is there a limit to that? But you're usually the ones that are home, right? If you're parenting kids, and in the midst of that, and it's a great opportunity. You got to have a respectful relationship there, and depending on if it's a man or a woman or whatever it is, you want to be careful in some of those ways. But over time, as AIM now gets to know some of these people, the biggest thing that people who are transient or homeless or in need is they need respect. They need relationship way more than they need your money. Yes, do they have some desperate needs? Yeah, they do. Can you help meet those and be a picture of Christ to them? Sure. Are there boundaries to that you got to draw at times? Yes. But the biggest thing that they need is they need relationship. And so I remember the most impactful times that we would spend time discipling a JR or Anthony and Alexis and Fred or Shaquilla, the sweet girl in our neighborhood who was trying to get her education and go to school, but her family wouldn't take her to school, wouldn't drop her off. And she was crying one day outside of our house, and Amy, she went out and started talking to her, and Amy ended up giving her a ride and setting up a schedule, and she would come over and study at our house and the whole deal, and it built a relationship. She would have dinner with us, and we got to spend a lot of time talking to her about the Lord and discipling her in her faith and growing her up in the midst of that, just because we were responding to her need, but we were inviting her to have a relationship with us, right? And with a lot of those kind of people that you see in need, oftentimes the idea is, well, man, when am I going to find time to meet with them, and how would I do that, and what would that look like? And really the most effective way we found was just ask them to do what you're already doing. I mean, one time JR, this 53-year-old man, came in and just watched Snow Buddies, one of those puppy movies, which there's like a million of them, right? There's Santa Buddies and whatever, Air Buddies and all the buddies. Anyways, our kids loved them. And so we came over one day. He wanted to do some work or whatever. I said, we can get to that. But just, man, why don't you just come in and hang out? And so he came in, and, man, he laughed, and we hung out, and we had a great time. And they were asking questions about the dogs and all that kind of stuff and, you know, B-Dog and whatever and all these kind of things. And we had a really, really sweet time there connecting with him relationally. And that's really what he needed more than anything else. And as we continued to do that and invite him into our home, he got to hear how we talked to our kids. He got to hear the things we talked about, how we responded in the gospel in ways, how we taught him the Bible. He would hang out with us for dinner. We'd have our family devotions. We had a chance to build into his life spiritually just because we were asking him to do what we were doing with us. And that's what I would say. And really, I could go on and on and on. Abigail's friends from school. Through school, you can disciple people from your kids' friends. Through work and just hospitality, we had a number of people at times come and live with us for a brief amount of time because they didn't have anywhere to go, and we ended up building relationships with them through inviting them into our home and making that a place they could come, through serving at our church. But I'm going to talk about through the church, through certain discipleship groups, because at every stage of our kids' lives, we invested intentionally. We had we call them D groups here, but it was a small group, community group, whatever you want to call it, right? And when I was a youth pastor, they were students, and we had FSM groups when our kids were infants. When we were in Denton and our kids were young in their toddler years, Amy had these college girls that would come over, and because they're on a college schedule, didn't have to be late at night, right? Sometimes we always put discipleship in a certain category. It's got to be after dinner. It's got to be from 6 to 8. It's got to be 2 hours. We got to follow this flow. It's got to do this. And you're sitting there going, that's the worst time for my kids to try and do discipleship. I mean, I don't know about you, but 5 to 8, good night. Try and disciple anyone in that window. Good luck. It's hard, right? And so she just found some girls. She said, who can come over at nap time from 2 to 4 when it's actually pretty peaceful? And she found girls that were willing to do that and bring them over to the house. And they would come over and they would spend time. And that became free babysitting for us because they loved our kids and they wanted to come back over. And how can I help you? It was a wonderful win-win for us in a lot of ways. But just her thinking outside the box and saying, how can I still do this on my schedule if they can come and do it on my schedule in the midst of that? And that's the misnomer, I think, sometimes about discipleship that I would just want to encourage you. And sometimes we think we have to find a way to stop our life completely and meet in a coffee shop and get face-to-face and hold each other's hands and talk about Jesus, okay? And it's not that you never do that. It's a wonderful thing to do. But at the same time, if you open up your heart and your mind to say, you know what, I'm not going to be able to add discipleship into my life any more than I can add parenting into my life. Right? When you had your first child, was your calendar ready for that? Was your schedule ready for that? Could you fit everything you were doing before that and all of a sudden just fit parenting into your life? No, you became a parent. Your identity changed, right? You became a parent. And then you learned how to do everything else you were doing in the midst of parenting because you were a parent. I would just say the same thing about being an ambassador for Christ and being a disciple maker. You are an ambassador for Christ. That's your identity. You are a witness, Acts 1:8. That's your identity. You are a disciple maker. Jesus calls you that. That is your identity. It's who you are now that you're a follower of Christ. You can't fit that into your calendar any more than you can fit being a parent to your calendar. You need to find a way to disciple while you do your life, okay, while you do the rest of your life, just like you parent while you do the rest of your life. And what it means is you're going to learn to say yes and no to things, right? Just like in your parenting, you have to say yes and no to things that you want to do because you're like, haven't been around the kids enough, and that's going to pull me away. My husband needs me over here, whatever it is. Like, there's times where you make intentional decisions to say yes and no to things in order to be the kind of parent you want to be. At the same time, it doesn't mean you never do anything else, right? You're here, okay? Many of you find a way to spend time with friends doing certain things, or maybe there's a hobby you love that you find a way to engage in, or maybe there are things that you do in your life that you find a way to do even though you parent because you value them. They're a value to you. They're important to you. I say the same thing about spiritual parenting. There are things that you'll have to say no to in order to spiritually parent and be a disciple maker. There are. There's things you'll say no to that other people will say yes to because you're like, I'm just not getting enough time with this person over here that God's really calling me to build into, to invite, to adopt into my spiritual family. I'm not getting enough time with her. And so I'm going to say no to that so I can spend some more time with her over here. Or, like we said, I'm going to ask her to go with me. I kind of want to go by myself because I can relax a little more. I don't feel like I'm on, blah, blah. But you know what? I'm going to invite her to go with me and just spiritually parent her alongside me while I'm going and doing this thing because I really want to do it, but I really want to spend time with her. You find a way to fit it into your life when it's a value to you, when it's important to you. So there are things you intentionally say yes and no to. At the same time, there are also things that you just invite people along with, like we just talked about. There's a guy in Memphis who does an amazing job. His name is Dr. David Libby. And he's an orthodontist. I don't know exactly what field of dentistry he's in, but I can't tell you the number of dental students still today in Little Rock that go off to Memphis for dental school and come back who are like, oh, you know David Libby? Every single dental student I've ever known in Memphis knows David Libby. and it's not because David Libby has a million hours. It's not because he doesn't have a job. It's not because he doesn't practice anymore. It's not because of any of that. It's because he's intentional about getting to know those dental students. He goes and speaks at the dental school. He gets to know them, and he invites them to play tennis with him. And anyone I know, whether they're good at tennis or not, he doesn't care. He's like, hey, you want to come play tennis? And a lot of times he's like, no. He's like, well, come on, you're going to go with me anyway. And he just takes him to play tennis. And he's a member of the club. He loves it. He hangs out at the racket club all the time there. And he always has someone with him. And they play tennis, and they hang out, and they hit the sauna, and they talk about Jesus. And he's walked more people through Milk to Meat playing tennis and hanging out with them than any human being I've ever known in my life. Just because he said, come and do it with me. Right? That's Jesus' words. Follow me. Come follow me. Come hang out with me while I'm doing what I'm doing. So I would just encourage you guys. Amy and I had to have that conversation with our D group in Memphis. We had a great multi-generational D group there. Had college students from Rhodes in it. It had people who were already empty nesters. It was a great multi-generational group. What we share with them is we said, look, we want to spend as much time with you as we can. We don't just want it to be an hour a week, okay, or 2 hours a week. Here's the thing. The age our kids are, we can't always find a way to put them away somewhere and go have coffee with you. But if you're willing to come over while I'm weeding the beds and weed them with me, man, not only will it go faster, but we can talk about Jesus all you want. If you want to come over and when Amy's doing bath time, man, you want to help us give the kids a bath and she can talk to you about Jesus while we're doing it, that'd be awesome. It'd bless us and we can spend time with you. Like if you're willing to come, I'm going to invite you to follow me in my life. If you're willing to do that, it's going to be messy. It's not always going to be easy. You may just have to engage with us while we're doing what we're doing. It's not going to be sitting down over coffee, but I can spend a ton of time with you if you're willing to do that. In fact, it's actually a blessing to me. If you want to come and actually engage in life with me, I can kind of have a built-in nanny while I'm doing this or a helpful yard boy or whatever it is. And we just invite them to do that. And some people didn't take us up on that, but some people did. And we got to build into a lot of people's lives, and it didn't really tank our schedule. It didn't really change our life so much we couldn't figure out how to sustain it. It actually enhanced our life. So I'll just encourage you guys in that. Your kids and discipling them is absolutely discipleship. At the same time, I do think God is calling us to also be a part of extending his spiritual family and parenting others too. And I think you can do that as you're going in your life, as you're going throughout your life in an effective way. Do you guys pray with me? Heavenly Father, we thank you so much for this group of women. God, we thank you so much for the truths they've been learning about discipleship, for the how-tos of it, for how you can do it in your home, for the calling that you have in our life and the Great Commission, for all the things they've been talking about and hearing about. Lord, I beg you that calling and that desire as they pray about it, as they think about it, as they process it with Kathy and Catherine and Carrie and all the other leaders that are here, God, I beg you that, one, they would ask questions when they don't know what to do, when they're confused about it at times or when they're feeling overwhelmed. Lord, at the same time, I really do beg you that they would believe your words. Come to me, all you who are weary and heavy laden, and I will give you rest. Behold, my yoke is easy and my burden is light. Doesn't mean it's always fun or nice or simple in a fallen, broken, sinful world. We know that. But Lord, I do believe that if we ask you how to do it, and if we look at you and how you did it with your disciples, if we try and truly follow in your footsteps, it doesn't have to be this confusing, overburdensome, heavy, horrible thing, Lord. It can be beautiful. It can be wonderful. It can be helpful. It can be the blessing our kids are to us. They're challenged and they're hard, but they're wonderful. They're the best gifts we have. We wouldn't trade them for anything, even though they can be challenging. That's true of spiritual parenting as well. That's true of discipleship. And Lord, I beg you that as these women even think about, hopefully, even now, even in the throes of young kids and toddlers or maybe even elementary kids or older kids, I don't know where they all are, but Lord, as they think down the road, give them a vision for what teenagerdom looks like with their kids and what empty nester looks like. God, what a blessing it is if we have a vision for our life that goes beyond just parenting our biological kids, where our whole future isn't just about pressuring them to have grandbabies so we have something else to do because it's been our whole life is just taking care of our kids. But Lord, as we engage in taking care of your kids, that never ends. It never stops. And we have a life outside of our kids as well that can be so healthy. Lord, I just beg you to give Amy and I continued vision for that. Help us to be excited about that as our kids launch away from home. Lord, help for these women as well to process that, think about that, and realize, yeah, that is really a beautiful picture of how life can continue to be. What I love about nurturing, I can do that forever. So we just love you and thank you and praise you for this time. In your name, amen.